What the EFL? It's the Football League podcast, Clapping for the Thunder. Coming up, Hegabo handball hoo-ha, Chef U points pen pending. That's a good deal. Transfers we like. What's happening this weekend? And MD1 reflections. Powered by Quinbet. This is What the EFL. Yeah, had a lot of rain around mine and Clarkie's way yesterday. Much needed it was as well. We're here in our new Friday slot to talk about all things Football League. We've got lots to go at today. It's me, Matt Davis Adams. I am joined by the aforeteased Adrian Clark. Adrian Clark.
Hello. Yeah, really good. Yeah, busy first weekend. And yeah, I'm fully into the EFL groove now. Lots to discuss today.
There surely is. Sam Parkin is bound for Lincoln shortly after we finish recording. How are you doing, Sam? You looking forward to comms duty in the championship tomorrow?
Very much so. Yeah, my father's birthplace for the 7,000th time on this podcast. I think he took me to one game at Sintel Bank, true story. So that would have been the old Division 4. Funny enough, a very wet day, like you guys have been experiencing. Turned up at Sintel Bank, they were playing Fulham. So there was a little bit of a link there because we used to go and watch Fulham when QPR were away when we were kids. So Lincoln Fulham, Division 4, and it got called off about 1:30. So I think from memory, I was probably maybe 10, 11 years old. We watched, really clear this bit, we watched the Fulham players doing some running, not at the side of the pitch, side of the ground on like a grass verge. Wow. Really, really clear in my memory. Next to the coach, obviously we've turned up disappointed and them's were the way it was in those days.
Well, I think you'll probably get a bit more action on Saturday. Let's hope so, at least. Before we get into things, let me remind you, our partners Quinbet have an offer for you where you can get 50% back up to £25. If your account has sportsbook losses at the end of your first day's betting, Quinbet will refund 50% of your losses as a free bet up to £25, minimum 3 bets. Even if your account's up, you're guaranteed a £5 free bet, provided you place at least one bet of £10 or greater at the minimum odds. T's and C's apply. It's 18+ and for new UK customers only. Visit gamblerware.org for information on responsible gambling. There is a link to that offer in the show notes. And while we're plugging stuff, if you'd like to leave us a nice review, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your pods, we would surely appreciate it very much. Right, let's kick things off proper with some news. Well, this is the one that's dominating the discourse at the moment. West Brom striker Ona Hegabo has been banned for two matches for scoring a goal with his hand in last weekend's 2-1 win at Norwich. Albion had appealed the decision, saying the ball's deflection off the Norwich goalkeeper materially affected the ball's trajectory and left Hegabo with less than 0.1 of a second to react. They also said, "We remain steadfast in our support of Ona, whose character and integrity have been evident throughout his time at the Hawthorns." It's a very divisive decision, Adrian. I mean, even is it divisive? It is quite the precedent for the FA to set and a big decision to make on something that, you know, you could argue was accidental.
It's too harsh. It is too harsh. Was it really deception from Hegabo? I don't think so. I think the ball does come at him quickly. It's deflected. He can't get his arm out of the way. And name me a footballer that's owned up to a handball or something that, you know, where they've scored and they shouldn't have done. I think it's happened once or twice, isn't it, in the sort of history of the game. I can't remember too many occasions. You'd love them to, but they just don't. I don't think it's a fair punishment, if I'm honest. I like it as a deterrent because players will now think twice about sort of trying to get that little advantage to maybe, you know, hope no one spots a little cheeky handball where they punch it in the net and they'll know that they're going to get busted. But for me, if they had seen it, they disallowed it, maybe given him a yellow. So why are they giving him a 2-game ban? You know, it's Norwich really that suffered. And if anyone should be punished, it probably should be West Brom rather than the individual. So, yeah, it's a bit too much for me. I don't know what Sam thinks.
I wonder, Sam, if the FA were thinking, right, we need to crack down on this kind of thing early in the season. Let's use the first example that we've got of it. And they've ended up making a rob for their own backs by picking the wrong one.
Yeah, possibly. We seem to go to the extremes. Was it 2 years ago when we had like 20 minutes added on in the first month of the season and then that completely diminished? I totally agree with Clarkey. I mean, I've probably been in that exact situation multiple times during my career. I don't think he means it at all. I mean, he clearly handballs it, and when he's wheeling off, he knows he's handballed it, but I think it's just reactionary to the way the ball's been flashed in. It might have deviated a little bit. It's coming at him so quickly, and it has to be on a case-by-case basis. You know, you think of the Thierry Henry one for France against Ireland.
clearly meant it.
That's a ban.
I think we can all categorically say that Thierry Henry knew what he was probably doing on that occasion. I don't have a problem if Hecker does that and it gets a ban. In fact, I'd be in agreement with Clarkie that would be quite a good deterrent. But that is, I could not believe it when that came through yesterday afternoon. I think it's a really poor decision to punish him for two games. I think he's an incredibly honest player, first and foremost, as well. And yeah, I think he was just probably reacting to a ball that was absolutely smashed across the six-yard box. So I think it has to be case by case. This can't be, consistent every time someone handballs it, or, indeed, maybe is deemed to simulate to win a free kick or a penalty.
Shame for him as well, because they're playing Newcastle in the Carabao Cup next week and he won't be able to be involved in that one. Elsewhere, what is about Sheffield clubs and points deductions? After Wednesday's woes last season, Sheffield United could be hit with a 12-point deduction after the company used to buy the club was placed into liquidation by the High Court earlier this week. They are COH Sports Bidco Limited. They agreed to buy the Blades for just over £100 million in December 2024. £35 million still owed on the deal. A club spokesman said Sheffield United Football Club is aware of today's hearing at the High Court. This is a matter between the current owners and former owners. The club is in contact with the EFL and the day-to-day operations at Sheffield United are unaffected. Sam, you're always our expert on this, having suffered something similar during your time at Leeds, and this is a right pain for Chris Wilder and the players to have this hanging over them at the start of the season.
Yeah, a huge pain for him, because he'll have obviously ambitions of getting them, well away from the position that they finished in last year and getting them in that top eight to have a crack at a promotion. He was very vocal, wasn't he, a few years ago when they had the 2 points deducted and they actually made it all the way to Wembley and then defeated last knock-ins by Sunderland. And it just feels like there's still a little bit of a dark cloud over Sheffield United in terms of the business that they're not being able to do. Hamer leaving in the last couple of weeks. A few players that they've been linked with that have decided or ended up going elsewhere. The squad, I think, is a good squad in terms of experience, Championship, but whether it's good enough to get into the higher echelons, I probably doubt. Yeah, I mean, if they are deducted anywhere near that amount, then yeah, it's going to be a season looking over the shoulder rather than thinking about promotion. So yeah, really difficult, I think, for everyone there, because of the size of the club in the Championship. Chris Wilder would expect to be in the dugout and challenging, but at the moment I think things off the pitch, and also the squad that's been accumulated across the last couple of years or he's been left with, is probably not quite strong enough to have a tilt at it.
It's a worry, this ownership. Obviously, if they still owe $35 million to Prince Abdullah's company, then you're going to liquidation. You can't leave him hanging there. That's not right. And they've made a bit of a mess of it, haven't they? I remember that AI model. Do you remember that, when they were trying to sign players based on AI and stats and stuff? And I mean, none of them come to any. None of them really were fancied by Chris Wilder. So yeah, disastrous sort of change of ownership, really. And yeah, they probably just need to sell it, if they can, to somebody new, or certainly get some heavy investment from elsewhere.
Only a couple of years since they were in the Premier League, all feels a bit Leicester-y at the moment. Let's stay in Sheffield then, because on Thursday night, not a great day for Wednesday. Forced to go against their name and play the day after they would like to. They were bested by the Bantams of Bradford at Hillsborough after Aidan Baldwin's early second half strike settled a contest played out in front of more than 33,000 people. We should start with the winners though, Sam, because it's 3 on the spin for Bradford in all comps and they haven't let a goal in yet. They might also fancy their chances of a cup upset at home to Burnley on Wednesday as well.
Absolutely, yeah. No, a little bit fortuitous, certainly, not to go behind in this game, because Wednesday really flew out the traps and had multiple opportunities. Bannon should have scored. A couple of others. Slattery was impressive through this time from Motherwell. Real energy, tenacity in the middle, driving them forward. But yeah, they rode their luck in the first half, and then it just completely flipped in the second period. And I think looking in from outside, it's a very new team, Sheffield Wednesday. Quite a few recognisable players defensively, but in the forward positions, obviously Barry's coming on one side, Gray on the other, still Jamal Lowe leaving the line, the aforementioned Slattery. So it's going to take some time, and I think when you're used to the old cliche, you're used to losing every week. You're certainly used to conceding set pieces, which is the way they lost last night to the Baldwin volley. 26 goals they conceded from set pieces last season. That's not going to change overnight, especially if you've got similar personnel in your back line. But yeah, Bradford in the second half completely transformed, had two or three opportunities to make it even more sound of the victory. And yeah, I think Sheffield Wednesday are going to be fine, but I probably wasn't in the camp that they were going to kind of romp to promotion just based on them being a big club in League One. They've had a lot of discourse, a lot of troubled days across the last year or two, which may take a fair portion of time to get over. So yeah, great win for Bradford. And yeah, with numbers dwindling in their kind of their squad in terms of their options in midfield coming into this season, I still think they probably need to do one or two bits, but it's been a brilliant start to the season for them.
Sheffield Wednesday, Clarkie, I know they won the first two games, but given the nature of how they came down and the fact they've got new owners, you do wonder if pressure might come quite quickly on Henrik Pedersen. And this is the first of three successive home games. I mean, Wolves at home in the Cup, I mean, that, I don't know what kind of team Wolves are going to play. There might be a prospect there. But then Bromley go to Hillsborough, and we're going to use, well, I'm going to use this cliche a lot, but it's Cup final territory, isn't it, if you're going away to Hillsborough in League One this
season? Definitely, yeah. They're going to be there to be shot at. And look, with those kind of crowds, you know, the feel-good factor is back. They're really on board with the team, with the manager. I think it would be a mistake for the new owners to maybe react too quickly to a disappointing start in terms of results. So if they get beat by Wolves, get beat by Bromley, personally wouldn't be thinking about pulling the trigger just then, because I do think that there should be a lot of goodwill from the efforts of everyone last season. So, but this is football, so that's probably an absolute load of nonsense, and they will barrel fire him at the first opportunity. So yeah, let's see how it plays out. I actually think, I agree with Sam, I think they're going to be fine. It's just you know, it's not going to, but they're not going to romp to promotion, that's for sure.
Well, they're going to have to do it without Tyler Onyango. Anyway, set to miss the rest of the season after suffering an ACL injury on his debut. He lasted 14 minutes against Leighton Orient last weekend, having joined on a free from Everton. I mean, this is just atrocious, isn't it, Sammy? The worst time to get injured is when you've gone through your pre-season. It's in the first game. But at a new club, I don't know if this ever happened to either of you, but you must be feeling, I don't know, some sort of misplaced guilt as well as huge disappointment and wondering why you.
Yeah, I went to Luton from Ipswich and played about five or six games in the Championship, but I wasn't fully over my previous injury, broken ankle at Ipswich, and yeah, I broke down. And I was...
Were you a bit scared in the medical? Or didn't you really do a proper medical?
It was the days when it probably wasn't that stringent, to be fair. And I got back the back end of the previous season, and I'd done the whole pre-season. So I think quite often they look at that, don't they, really? Maybe rather than, you know, pouring over the scans and what have you, maybe speaking to the specialist is just about, right, he's back fit, he's trained X amount of days, he's featured all the pre-season games. I think I've been around the squad the first month of the season at Ipswich as well. So full sense and purposes, I was ready to go, but I don't think, you know, my ankle, my body was ready for the rigors, and I was in so much pain that it was investigated, and I ended up missing about a year or 18 months. And I felt like a fraud. That's the first word that jumped out to me there when you're speaking. And in the main, the supporters were really good with me, but you know, there was the odd comment. Obviously, when you're attending the home games, for example, which I used to hate doing, that was one of the hardest parts, I think, of the injuries, aside from the rehab and the lonely days and what have you. It was going and trying to support the lads and trying to do the right thing, which I think was kind of, it was a good characteristic of my mum. I think she used to just, you know, make me grin and bear stuff like that really hard. I remember actually Mike Newell pulling me one day, and I thought, he's not happy with something that I've maybe done around the place, or wanted to add extra sessions in as I was trying to recuperate. But it was actually to say, do you know what? I've noticed you coming in the dressing room every Saturday at 1:30 to wish the lads good luck, to be a presence. And it was so difficult to do that. Like, I would rather have been anywhere else in the world. So I think that's a little side to it, which maybe the supporters don't see. Incredibly challenging, and it will be for these players that are obviously going to miss the entirety of the season. But yeah, they're going to get the best support now, don't they? And, you know, the rehabilitation in the days that I'm talking of, a lot of it was left up to your own devices, because we weren't in a position, which Clarkey, I'm sure, will echo, to have one guy be your shadow for the entirety of the working day. You're basically told, maybe here's a plan, get yourself down to the gym and do your work, especially when it's a long-term one. So yeah, you didn't have the care, certainly, that the lads get now, and something I think about a lot. Would I have done things differently? Absolutely. There's probably a multitude of things that I'd have changed about the way that I attacked my rehabilitation, but you're a young lad and we're probably a product of the era that we played in, to a degree.
Defo. Yeah, just very quickly on mine, I joined Welling, my last ever club, in the Conference South, and they'd gone... The manager, A.D. Penner, had really pushed to sign me. He'd asked me, I think, the year before, and I didn't. And then he'd really sort of pursued us. And I thought, yeah, I'll go for it. And I was looking forward to it. I had a great pre-season. First game was good at home. First away game. And felt this terrible pain in my sort of groin. And that was the beginning of the end. That was my chronic pelvic injury had sort of come to bear. And for that whole season, my one season there, I couldn't train. So I could play for about an hour, 70 minutes, and then I'd be in agony for the rest of the week, and then I'd be all right to get good to go the next week. I did feel guilty, because you're earning money, Welling, you know, not exactly a rich club, and yeah, so it's part of football.
The Ledley King of non-league, they called it. Meanwhile, Bromley boss Andy Woodward confirmed a similar issue for Ashley Charles. Woodman was heard to remark, "Ashley sadly snapped his cruciate and has done some other damage in his knee. He had an operation. I don't think we'll be seeing him again this season," which is miserable.
People all involved.
Yeah, a bit of a problem for Bromley. We wish them well. Okay, we are going to talk next about what we noticed on week one. A couple of very interesting games that the chaps were a party to in the first weekend of EFL action. Adrian was at Cardiff 1, Wrexham 1 on Monday. A couple of great goals in this. Kiefer Moore not shy to celebrate in front of his old club supporters. Well, what did you enjoy about this one?
Oh, I enjoyed a lot about it. I enjoyed seeing a full house. That was tremendous. I mean, I've been to Cardiff City Stadium a few times where it's been half full, and it feels so empty and sort of lacking in atmosphere and passion. This was different. It was a proper game. First time those red seats in the Ayatollah stand had been filled, I think, for a league game since the Premier League. But from a Cardiff point of view, Wrexham sort of put a pin in the atmosphere, didn't they, early on with that Kiefer Moore goal. Great. Nice little ball over the top by the new signing Imre, the right wing back. He's quick, by the way, and he's going to give them a new dimension, Wrexham, down the right side for sure. Good little ball over the top, and it's a lovely finish. Little caress on the half volley into the top corner. Wrexham were good. They were streetwise. They pushed them back. I thought Cardiff went with two attacking a midfield, really, at the start of the game. You had Robertson, who's a actual midfielder, and then I think you had Ashford and Moylan two attacking midfielders in front, and they couldn't handle Wrexham's three box-to-box guys. They pushed them back and really should have scored more, had chances on the counter. Cardiff got better and played some good football, but it didn't really hurt Wrexham that much. I thought, to all intents and purposes, it should have probably been 2 or 3-0 Wrexham. That's despite the sort of stats saying Cardiff had all the pressure. It was Wrexham that were the ones that were penetrative, really. But they missed their chances. And then in the last kick of the game, Reuben Colwell, who's massive, by the way, in real life. Like, I didn't realise. I don't know, he must have grown since I last saw him. Because I have seen him play before in the flesh, and he just looked like a giant. And which is unusual for an attacking midfielder, obviously. What I loved about the goal was the way he committed to the shot. Okay, so a lot of players, and I've found it myself, where you tickle it, you're sort of like, you don't want to, you're going for placement rather than power, but he has just absolutely lashed it, but with great technique. Yes, the goalie probably should have, you know, saved it, but the pace beat him because it was an absolute rocket. So yeah, and then the limbs inside that stadium were I don't know if I'll see better limbs all season. That's how good it was. So yeah, it was a really good little Monday night out.
Excellent. Sam, you got a decent one as well, didn't you? 3-2 thriller between York and Bristol Rovers. I enjoyed Scott Lindsay saying afterwards, we gave the fans something to sing about, which felt quite pointed, as in, yeah, rather than just booing me and the decisions that I'm making. A nice way for them to reintroduce themselves to the EFL after a decade away.
Yeah, to properly answer your question, what did I learn? I learned that we shouldn't be worried about York City and all the commotion that's gone around them the last few weeks. Yeah, for people that don't obviously know, yeah, Stuart Maynard obviously took them up with that record-breaking points tally last season. Sacked unceremoniously, and Scott Lindsay walking straight into the gig more or less the next day, and subsequently losing obviously their first game in the Carabao Cup at home quite neatly to Crawley 2-0. But they're a really good side. And apologies to York City supporters. You know, I don't work on the National League, so. Yeah, this was me going in a little bit blind, having done all my prep and watched them last season, pre-season. This is a really good team that play lovely football, as you would imagine they would do under Scott Lindsay. All happy on the ball. 3-4-2-1. I like the middle centre-half, Zach Johnson in particular. There's been a lot of discourse around Ollie Banks. He's starred in a attacking midfield role for York City last year. I think double figures or thereabout for goals. But, you know, he's played hundreds of games as a deep line midfielder. I actually picture him in front of a back four spraying balls around. And that's where Scott Lindsay's seen him, which has meant a lot of unrest from the supporters, given the way that they started against Crawley the other day. But it was Banks and a lad called Alex Hunt, who I wasn't too au fait with. Lovely footballer, really nice. But the stars on Saturday were Harry Boys, who got 9 assists for Southend last season. This was his league debut. Left wing back, the right wing back, Joe Felix, was impressive as well. But Boys got 2 goals. The first was a beautiful finish just outside the box, outside of the left foot, kind of clipped into the corner. I've jumped ahead here because Bristol Rovers actually went in front in the game when York had made all the early running, complete control. And it was kind of just a moment where you thought, yeah, they maybe would have got away with it in the National League. But when you step up a division and Bristol Rovers have got some quality attacking players, they managed to conjure an opportunity to get their nose in front. But it just felt like York needed to get their maiden goal in the Football League, which they got just after half time, and then they settled down and obviously ended up winning the game 3-2. There was a few hairy moments late on. But yeah, really good team performance. My one question mark is probably the centre forward at the moment. Akinyemi played there. He was at Derry City lastly. He was a previous York City player, but he's been off in Ireland. He went off injured. And so Ollie Pearce, who got all these goals in the National League, I mean, I looked at his numbers. He scored more than 250 goals in his career. And he's not a veteran by any stretch. He played as one of the 10s, but he got pushed to centre forward for the second half of this game. And he had one or two opportunities, but I think they're a little bit light in that area. He liked Scott Lindsay, Joe Gray and Ollie Pearce as these two number 10s, and they actually complement each other really well. Gray's a bit of a runner with the ball. Pearce is a bit more of a technician. So I think a little bit light in that area, but given the way their home form was last season, given the way that they are used to winning matches, and on this evidence against a much fancied Bristol Rovers side, mainly by me, who tipped them for the championship, York are going to be in the reckoning, I think, for the playoff position.
Adrian, before we get to transfers, you've seen Middlesbrough.
I did, yeah. That was a cracking game. Brilliant opening game at 3 o'clock last Saturday. Just want to say how good Lincoln were. For the first 45 minutes, they run real outstanding. Without the ball, they graft and they hassle and harry, and they're a machine. They really are. And then they go sort of back to front quite quickly, but with a real purpose. And I thought the striker, Freddie Draper, we've talked about a bit last year, he was outstanding. Unreal work. Ben House as well. Left wing / striker hybrid position, in and out of possession. Phenomenal. The two midfielders, Varfolomeyev and McGrandles, different class. The defence, resilient. Honestly, they deserved a point, really, against a very good Borough team. But Will Langshear was the difference, wasn't he? I think he had 6 shots in the end, scored 2 goals from a grand total of about 3 yards. So yeah, Lincoln was superb. Borough, Very poor in the first half, but the second half, they had 16 shots and Lincoln had one. So it shows you how they sort of ground them down. And Riley McGree made the big difference off the bench and set up the winner with an unbelievable piece of skill. So, yeah, I think Borough will be relieved and Lincoln should be encouraged. And what struck me at the final whistle, they just lost the last minute winner. As soon as that whistle went, the entire Lincoln away end, hands in the air, clapping their team, standing up. They knew that there's nothing to be ashamed of about that performance. So, watch out maybe Pompey this weekend, because I think Lincoln will not be easy.
We're going to talk more about that game shortly, but next we're going to do some transfer chat. So we've all picked out a couple of moves that we liked over the last few weeks that might have passed you by. Let's go one apiece. Sam, you started with somebody who was good in the Championship last season for a team who were not.
Yeah, Jordan James, just saw it come through in the last 48 hours or whatever, and just thought, what a tidy bit of business when you consider the amount of experience he's got. I think for a 22-year-old, well in excess of 130, 140 maybe Championship games, Player of the Year last year, obviously at Leicester in that relegated side, and just adds a lot more nous, I think, now that they're a Championship side, a lot more strength in an already stocked midfield. I mean, the midfield and the attacking areas for that 2-2 against Blackburn, I don't know where he's going to get in. Maybe he plays as part of a two-man midfield pivot alongside Andre, but they had Minetti in there who scored the goal for Lopez. Everyone's really excited about Mane. We saw only 18 years of age, starring in the Premier League at times last year. He's probably going to need a little bit of a rest on occasions. And Rodrigo Gomez is a good player as well. So a very, very talented kind of front look to that side. But yeah, I think he's an excellent signing. Probably one of those signings that crop up and you think every team in the Championship would be improved with him and probably would have wanted him. And easy one for him. I had a look this morning. He's from Hereford, I think, where he grew up, but obviously been at Birmingham for a number of years, and I'd imagine he's still got the keys to whatever property he was residing in last season. So the settling in period should be nice and smooth.
Yeah, on loan from Rennes. Let's hope he gets a permanent move. I don't like it when players spend too long out on loan. Clarkey, your first pick is somebody who's going from a Premier League academy to a team that you've just spoken about.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Ashley Phillips, yes, from Spurs. Look, he's had a couple of good loan spells at Stoke. Played over 70 games, actually, for Stoke across the last two seasons. But yeah, I think Borough needed a goalie. They needed a striker. They addressed it with Vitek and with Lancashire. The other position, I've got to be honest, and I don't like digging him out, but Luke Ayling, I think, as a centre-back, if you're going to play in a back four, don't know if he's the one to get you over the line. I still think he's more of a right side centre back in a three than playing in a back four. He's made a lot of mistakes in that position. I think Ashley Phillips is probably just a more natural fit, and I think he'll play well alongside Melanda, who I do like. He's an excellent player. So yeah, look, Phillips is tall. He's pretty mobile for a big guy. Good in the air. He's really strong in his duels. He might have to sharpen up a bit with his distribution. He can pass, of course he can, but playing for Bury, you're going to have a lot of the ball. You're going to be inside the opposition half, but I do think he will start regularly alongside Melanda, and I think that's potentially a good partnership.
Nice. My first one is also a Premier League Academy player. It's Reggie Walsh. He's gone from Chelsea to Wigan. He's a number 10. Quite silky, following in the footsteps of Reece James, who did so well, didn't he, on loan at Wigan a few years ago. Walsh was a little bit lightweight. He got bullied in the Youth Cup tie against Man City last year, but he obviously took that to heart because he's hit the gym over the summer and come back looking like he's packed on some muscle. He also won the bleep test in pre-season training for the Chelsea first team, which I'm sure he's been bragging about. He was the third youngest player in their history. He made his debut in a Conference League semi-final against Djurgården a couple of years ago when he was 16. Played in the Championship, in the Champions League, I should say, last season as well. 11 goals, 14 assists in 39 for the Chelsea Academy teams last season, and very highly thought of as well. So he might be one to watch in League One for Wigan. Who's your second pick, Sam?
Well, I'm gonna stick a couple in here and complete the Chelsea loanee hat trick, because I was going to go for Dastan Sapayev, who is a Kazakh forward, 18 years old, played in the Champions League actually last year for Kairat. And we saw him in pre-season, didn't we, Matt? And he scored a great goal against Western Sydney, if memory serves, and a couple of other kind of cameo appearances off the bench. But I just look at that Burnley front line, and I know there's a lot of conversation about Fleming potentially moving back into the Premier League, but it's those two positions, either wider or just off the centre forward, which I think he could maybe occupy. I think it's a tall order for an 18-year-old to be playing, you know, loads of minutes as the starting centre forward in a really fancied side. But yeah, Ramsey and Edwards started the game against West Ham, and their numbers haven't been great since going into the Championship previously. Edwards scored bundles of goals in Portugal. But I just think off the side, he made really intelligent runs, obviously very, very forward thinking, and wants to get in on goal. You know, even if he's starting slightly off the left-hand side. Good experience already. He seems like a really high pedigree young player. So looking forward to seeing how he does. And my third would be Kavuma McQueen, sorry, at Pompey. Just jumps off the page to me, 17, which is a little bit of an anomaly to allow a lad of that age to go out, even for, you know, a club like Chelsea. They normally kind of maybe wait another year, but that just shows how quickly this guy's developing. I saw him against Manchester City at Stamford Bridge at the end of last season. He was one of the standout players. He came on at halftime against QPR in that defeat at Fratton Park and just gave everyone a lift, was really positive, got a few shots away. Looks like he's going to play out on the left-hand side rather than inverted, because they've got Kamara, who starred previously for Portsmouth when he was there before going to Hull, if memory serves. So they've got him back off the right, Kavuma McQueen maybe off the left. And yeah, I'm really excited to see what he can produce.
Yeah, he made his first team debut last season, got 13 goals for Chelsea's academy side. Give us your second pick then, Adrian.
Yeah, Jack Moylan, 24. I mean, we know him from he's at Lincoln, he's at Cardiff. I saw him against Wrexham. I like him centrally, okay? So he started the game as the right-sided 8 or 10, and he ended it as the left winger. I preferred him central. What I like about this guy is obviously he can score goals. He got 11 last year, different types of goals, got a really good right foot, but it's the movement. He breaks into the box for fun. I think that the way that Cardiff play, they're always looking to spread those little balls into the danger zone. He's always got little one-touch flicks. He's got good vision, and he can whip his shots away. So yeah, I think that Jack Moylan, alongside Reuben Colwell, who we talked about earlier, as twin attacking midfielders behind Salek, it's got potential. You know, they're a bit lightweight, Cardiff. They're a bit green, a bit lacking in a little bit of streetwiseness. Maybe that's because I saw them against Wrexham, who sort of has a key strength. But I think that's a good, that those two behind the striker is excellent, and I think he'll thrive.
Okay, my last one, going against the grain somewhat, is a veteran. It's Andreas Weimann, who's joined Cheltenham after he left Derby in the summer. Made his debut in English football 16 years ago. I basically want to shoehorn in a little quiz here. I'm setting a timer for 20 seconds, one by one. Name me the 9 clubs that Andy Weimann has played for, including loans. Right, Adrian, you can kick us off. Go.
Derby.
Correct. Sam.
Villa.
Correct. Adrian.
Bristol City.
Correct. Sam.
Go to Sheffield United for a bit?
No. Adrian.
Oh, God. I'm out now.
That's it. Time's up. Okay. We had Villa, Watford, Derby, Wolves, Bristol City, West Brom, Blackburn, Rapid Vienna, and now Cheltenham.
I might have had Watford.
I'd have had Blackburn, I think, if I'd had longer, if I didn't panic. Cheltenham, Steve Cottrell. Yeah, a year with him, and I reckon he'll retire off the back of this season.
I don't want to do a disservice to Cheltenham, because I love going there, but that can be as much about how he adapts to the environment, right? I mean, he's not going to have seen the like, probably, some of the training facilities and probably the luxuries you get at Premier League and Championship level. That's going to be very different at Cheltenham, I would imagine. It's going to be some adaptation period for him.
All right. Well, he made his debut as a sub against Rotherham in a win last week. We'll see how many more appearances he makes. Right, Adrian, you want to debut a new feature. It's called Adrian's Stat Trick. I'm going to give you the floor to tell us more.
Yeah, I want to try this out. Yeah, so here's my stat trick from match week one of the EFL. Just a stat from each division that caught my eye. In the Championship, Zian Fleming had 9 shots against West Ham. I mean, it's not 9 shots against a team you're expecting to be near the bottom of the league. It's 9 shots against relegated West Ham. Played really well. Should have scored more than the 2, but quite the effort. In League One, Bromley, newcomers, they made just 112 successful passes, but they did win 1-0 at Barnsley. 5 teams in League One had under 200 passes and only one of them lost. So that has sort of set a little bit of a pattern there in that division. You don't need a lot of the ball to win games. And in League Two, Newport, 9 of their 12 shots in their win against Rochdale were from set pieces. All 3 stem from them as well. One from a corner, one from a recycled free kick, and the other one was from a long throw. So Newport are going to rely lots on set pieces, you imagine, this season.
All right, I like that. We shall probably continue it next week. Next day, we are going to have a look at where we are this weekend. So as I mentioned, Sam, Lincoln are getting loads of mentions on the pod this week, aren't they? You're heading up to Sinsel Bank for one of the early kickoffs in the Championship on Saturday. You'll be on Sky Duty for this one. We've spoken a bit about Lincoln and Pompey as well with Ryan Kavuma-McQueen. You're expecting this to be a closely fought contest, I would suggest.
Absolutely. I think a really difficult game for Pompey in light of the way that they went down against QPR the other day. I mean, they went down. They had an atrocious 15, 20 minutes towards the end of the first half when they completely capitulated. The performance from the off was actually very good and they deservedly took the lead through Terry Devlin. But yeah, I think this is going to be a real tough game for them when you factor in it's 65 years or whatever since Lincoln have played in the second tier. The fans are going to be really up for it. I think there's been some work done to the ground as well. So everyone will be really enthusiastic about getting back there. And let's not forget that's their 29 game unbeaten run coming to an end at Middlesbrough the other day. They're 17 unbeaten at home. The most obvious thing to me doing my prep is the obvious set piece threat that Lincoln have. Hamer's long throw, yeah. How potent they were last season, and the flip side, how bad Pompey were defending set pieces. You remember, I'm sure Clarkey does, around about the time of that Arsenal game.
Yeah.
Was it the FA Cup when...
They're all over the place, Pompey, yeah.
Obviously, they scored a few Arsenal because that's what they did, but it was a common theme for Pompey. So that's going to be big. Also, what shape do they go with? I had a little look this morning. I think they only played a back 3-4 times last season. Obviously, they've stepped up a level. You're going to have to allow for that when you go to places like the Riverside. That's the sensible thing to do, and a lot of clubs will follow suit. At home, I would expect them to play a 4-2-3-1, a 4-4-2. So maybe one of the wing-backs or one of the centre-halves misses out and they rejig it. Rob Street would be an obvious one.
Towler might miss out at the back. Ella Railway was really good with Hamer. I think it might be Towler that misses out.
Yeah, and... Clarkey spoke about House's kind of hybrid role, so he can do a job equally well off one of the sides or down the middle. So, yeah, I think fascinating from that point of view. Pompey have got a bit of a problem at centre-forward as well at the moment. Let's not pretend they haven't. Bishop's obviously struggling for goals. He's been such a big player for them, but he's obviously started this season in the same vein that he finished the last, unfortunately. Wide players, really excited about seeing the two guys I've already mentioned today. Kavuma-McQueen had that cameo the other day, came on for a young lad that they've signed from New Zealand. Wait to see if he starts. So yeah, I think, you know, Pompey finished last season really well. Let's not forget that. And they did really well on the road. So I'm not going to read too much into the opening day performances from both, but I just think, given that Lincoln are back in the second tier, you have to make them slight favourites for that reason alone.
Okay, well, my game is also a Championship one, QPR against Bolton. For me, table topping Queen's Park Rangers, as Sam has insisted that I call them, looking to win their opening game, 2 games of a league season for the first time in a decade after victory at Pompey last week. As Sam pointed out to me, it's quite a good opening run for them. Bolton, Pompey, Bolton, Blackburn, Cardiff. So an opportunity to put some points on the board. But Bolton, of course, also won on opening day and against local rivals. They haven't won their opening 2 matches of a second tier campaign since the 77-78 season, which ended in promotion to the top flight. They've tied down Ruben Rodriguez to a 2-year contract extension this week as well. So yeah, looking forward to that one. I thought it might be a tight game, but if history is anything to go by, it won't. Only one of Bolton's 17 away games against QPR in the Football League has ended in a draw. So there's me cursing that to be nil and very much nil on Saturday. Clarkie, you're going into League One for your pick. It's MK Dons against Huddersfield.
Yeah, I'm not at an EFL game, sadly, this weekend, but I like the look of the game. I think it's two teams that will be sort of towards the top end of League One. Huddersfield, I mean, great win against Jacko's Wimbledon on the opening day, not least because they did it with 10 men for over a half. You know, they're already 2-0 up, but they saw it through and won 3-0. So very impressive from them. A new name, Darren Celi Sanchez Fernandez, got a brace. And I'm looking forward to seeing how he gets on this season. I don't know if anyone hasn't seen it. He scored the first one, which was a decent enough goal, a little carry and a strike. But the second one was dropped a shoulder, left corner of the box and whipped it left footed into the far corner. Really good goal. And what I like about this is he's got basically Huddersfield signed a right back and an attacking midfielder from the same club, from Excelsior in Holland. So you've got Ilias Bronckhorst playing on the right, and then you've got Sanchez Fernandez playing kind of near him. So there's a real good chemistry there already. I'm surprised more managers don't do that. Sign players in twos, you know, that you know link up really, really well. Between them, they had 24 ball carries last weekend, and four of those ended in shots. So, yeah, really good. I think they'll go with 3-4-1-2, effectively 3-5-2, and that is what MK Dons go with as well. So they'll have the same shape. And look, MK really should have beaten Oxford. Didn't have much of the ball, which is probably not a surprise with a Paul Warne team, but it was a heck of a game. 24 shots they created at Oxford, which isn't bad going. Oxford had 17, though, themselves. So maybe they're going to be, you know, quite fun to watch. I don't know this season, but you just look at the MK Dons team with Nombe and Collins up front, Wiles, Winter, Barlasser in midfield. There's a lot of good players there that should do absolutely fine. So I think it'll be a good game. Don't know which way it will go. It could be quite an even contest. I'd expect goals as well. So maybe a little Desmond. I can see that. A little 2-2.
Yeah, a couple of lads that didn't quite make my transfer chat that you're likely to see this weekend. Just Wrexham having a bit of an exodus with Ryan Barnett going to MK, who I've always liked. Very dynamic, down the right-hand side. So Clarkie may see him when he's watching the highlights of that one. And Lewis Brunt to Bolton. Central defender. I remember him being on loan at Mansfield a few years ago.
He was a Leicester Academy kid, wasn't he? Yeah.
Yeah, and really took note of him. Quite elegant on the ball. Not quite happened for him at Wrexham. So he's gone to Bolton. They got over the line the other day. They really worked late on Bolton against Preston after playing really well for 70, 75 minutes. But he'll add real quality, I think, to their back line. So, yeah, just quite interesting. Maybe that's a glimpse that Wrexham are about to start rolling the dice a little bit in the transfer market. Okonkwo going to Charlton, the goalkeeper, as well in the last 24 hours. So those three decent squad players they've allowed to leave to maybe free up some space.
A Rexodus, I call it. You set him up and I'll tap him in, Sam. Predictions as we roll towards the end of the show. Clarkie's already gone for a 2-2 at MK Dons v Huddersfield. You won't get any points for that. You didn't get any points last week either.
Yeah.
Neither did I. Sam, you got Notts 1, Leicester 1. Bang on the money. 3 points. They were the only points that were scored in this game last week. So we're up in our game.
We didn't have a pre-season, to be fair, Matt, did we?
That's true. No minutes in our legs / minds.
I'm just going strategic.
That's got to be the name of your fantasy football team, hasn't it, Sam? Parking the bus.
It is. It has been always. But not as it the last few years. Yeah, it's been in residency for the last decade. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Always rapid decline for me. Clarkie, have you got something Arsenal related?
What? No. You're like mine. Mine's Savory Hands, which is just completely random. But back in the day when I was working at a place, so this is going to the early noughties. Early days of fantasy league, the guy who used to win it, my mate Tom, used to win it every year. He was called Sweet Feet. So what I decided to do one year was jinx it by going Savory Hands just to throw him off, and I won it. So I've kept it. I've kept it going ever since.
Wow. Okay. You did win this last year, predictions, but you've not made a good start. Let's let Sam have the first shot at this, given he got a perfect score. Southampton against Stoke. What do you reckon, Sam?
Well, I think early part of the season, it's going to be so paramount that they win their home games, because we saw at Watford the other day, that was actually one of my takeaways, that teams are going to get right wired into Southampton when they're away.
Our mascots.
Yeah. Now, he is the best, though, isn't he, Harry the Hornet? He is the best. Still fresh in my memory when he used to wind up Zaha, when they had that rivalry develop between.
And Roy Hodgson said, Harry the Hornet, who I presume is the Watford mascot. No, he's just the Hornet, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, his dancing's tremendous, but the binoculars is a tapping. But yeah, that's going to be a feature. They got a target on their back, haven't they, undoubtedly. So they have to win at home, and I think the crowd will be up for it for those reasons alone. 2-0 Southampton.
1-1 for me. Adrian?
I'm with Sam. I think they've got to win the home games. I think the fans will go big in terms of their support, but it won't be easy. They didn't play well on match day one, so they're going to scrape a 2-1 Southampton.
Okay. Peterborough Mansfield is the League One fixture. Darren McAntony getting himself into a little bit of hot water.
Yeah, making a lot of friends this week, wasn't he?
This week, yeah. I feel like maybe there's a bit of pressure being applied at Peterborough at the moment. And for that reason, I'm going to back one of my childhood heroes, Nigel Clough, to make him look even sillier than he's made himself look this week. And it will be 1-2 to the Stags. What do you reckon, Sam?
Yeah, that's where I was going to go. Just doesn't seem like everything's particularly rosy there. And I know a lot of people are down on their chances, maybe because of the transfer activity, but I've always been a big fan of Luke Williams in the dugout. So hopefully they can get things right, but I think there may be a bit of short-term pain. I think 1-0 is maybe quite likely Mansfield here.
I mean, if you're Luke Williams, you definitely don't want your owner making headlines that you don't really need, I think. Are you going to make it a clean sweep for the away side?
I was considering it, but yeah, I was. I had 2-1. But do you know what? I think that Peterborough at home, surely they can get something. But I agree. It doesn't sit right at the moment, and the owner doesn't seem in a particularly good frame of mind. I'll give him a draw. I'll give him a point. Peterborough 1, Mansfield 1.
Okay, and you can go first, Clarky, on our League Two selection, which is Rochdale against Creepy Crawley.
Didn't you have a good start today, Rochdale? Obviously undone by those three set pieces against Newport. But I think the first game at home, back in the league, they're going to be well up for this. The Dale fans and Crawley on the road, they might struggle. So it won't be a classic. I'm going to go Rochdale 1, Crawley 0.
Sam?
Total agreement. With Clarkey, annoyingly, not scored yet, Rochdale, and Crawley not scored in the last two. So it's difficult to envisage goals. I like Rochdale at home. I'll go the 1-1. I'll go the 1-1. Maybe late heartache for the home supporters as it was in the final knockings of the National League season.
Okay, I'm going to take 2-0 Rochdale on that one. We'll let you know how we get on next week. Nearly done for the day. Let me remind you again, though, that our partner Squinbet have an offer for you. You can get 50% back up to £25. If your account has sportsbook losses at the end of your first day's betting, Quinbet will refund 50% of your losses as a free bet up to £25, minimum 3 bets. Even if your account's up, you're guaranteed a £5 free bet, provided you place at least one bet of £10 or greater at the minimum odds. T's and C's apply. It's 18+ and for new UK customers only. Visit gambleaware.org for information on responsible gambling. Now you can find a link to that offer in our show notes. Again, a reminder, if you'd like to leave us a nice review, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, you can leave some comments as well. We appreciate it all. Helps people find the show. If you're new here, you might be getting used to Tweet of the Week. It's where we pick a banal post from somebody in the world of the EFL and dissect it. This week I've gone for Callum Kavanagh of Oldham Athletic, and he says, quoting the official account, who said, "Today's match attendance is 9,449 with 2,000 visiting supporters. Thank you for your incredible support this afternoon. Hashtag OAFC." Callum says, "Applause emoji, use Y-O-U-S-E, lots were unbelievable today." It's basic, it's poorly spelled, it's everything we're here for, Sam.
Do you know what? I'm no Shakespeare, so I don't want to be too hard on the young lad, but this, funnily enough, is one of my pet hates. I absolutely hate it. I can't abide it. So I like him as a player. Always have talked him up many a time on this podcast during his Bradford days. Absolutely. And I like him. And I wouldn't want to annoy his dad if I'm talking about the right Kavanagh here. But yeah, I just don't like that. It really upsets me. It really upsets me.
I think it's more acceptable if you're Scottish. He was born in Wales and has one cap for Republic of Ireland under 21s. Do you think his dad chastised him for this, Clark?
No, probably not. No, I mean, he's writing it how he'd say it. You know, so for that reason.
That's wrong as well. Use isn't a word. So
yeah, I know. You are unbelievable today. Yeah, like, it's not a term I would put pen to paper on myself. But, you know, we're all different. We're all unique. You know, we're individuals. And if that's how CalCav9 wants to express himself, you know, then I think it's fair enough. Being too harsh.
Okay.
I'm allowed to have my opinion now, aren't I? My other one is
all sure, Samuel.
He's for his is my other one.
He's. How do you spell that then?
It's not a word, is it? In the context that
H-E apostrophe S,
I suppose, instead of his, he's.
Yeah, it's not good enough. But look, he was fishing as well, wasn't he? Because I think he played well, scored, didn't he? Scored a couple. So, yeah, all the replies are basically loving him off. So, you know, it was a win-win. He praised the fans. Fans praised him back. He slept easy.
Yeah, got the brace in the 2-0 victory against Port Vale. His dad, of course, is Graham Kavanagh, known mostly, I would have said, for Cardiff, but it turns out he played much more for Stoke, so what do I know? Right, that's where we're going to leave things for today. We'll be back with another show same time next week. My thanks to Adrian, to Sam, and mostly to you for listening. Have a great weekend. We'll catch up with you soon. Bye.